working as a waitress in Beaumont. She said, I'm moving away. I'm gonna get what I want. I'm tired of
this. You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When conservatives bellow that they want to slash the number of federal employees, they usually don't have our ever-helpful park rangers in mind for the slashing. People love rangers, mainly because they're, well, helpful. Teaching us about the ancient cliff dwellers at Mesa Verde, guiding us along the Appalachian Trail, or bringing Lincoln's Gettysburg Address to life. Yet, while politicians of all stripes praise park rangers and give tribute to the majesty of our national parks, forests, seashores, monuments, and wilderness areas, they're deadbeats when it comes to paying the bill to keep these treasures in place and in good repair. Washington routinely shortchanges these assets, resulting today in an inadequate number of rangers to meet the public's need and a growing backlog of maintenance just to keep our parks from falling apart. George W., who campaigned as a Teddy Roosevelt-style park lover, promised that he would eliminate that backlog within 5 years. But instead, it's grown by as much as $3 billion since he's been in office. And while he claims to have boosted the budget of the Park Service, it's nowhere near enough to make up for the increased number of park visitors or the added burden of Homeland Security requirements that he put on the service. The operating budget is estimated to be $600 million a year short of what's needed. So our national treasures, which the overwhelming majority of Americans love, are crumbling. Unsafe trails, broken facilities, closed-off areas, shortages of guides and interpreters, shorter hours, and locked visitor centers. This is Jim Hightower saying, where'd the money go? To tax giveaways for the richest people in America, to Halliburton's fraud-ridden contracts in Iraq, to George's Star Wars fantasies, to his unlimited and unbudgeted warmongering, and to multi-billions of dollars in corporate welfare. Take just 10% of that money back, and our parks would again gleam like the gems they are.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, welcome, friends. What kind of nation is the United States? What kind of nation are we? What kind of nation have we been? What kind of nation do we want to be? What is the vision that Americans hold for themselves? Should America imitate the brutal imperial tactics of Hitler, the 18th century British Empire, or the 1st century Roman Empire in order to pacify the world and thus make it safe for Americans? I'm sure Dr. Andrew Bernstein would not characterize his position as I just did. In fact, we'll give him a chance to rebut it. Dr. Bernstein is an adjunct professor of philosophy at Pace University and at the State University of New York at Purchase. He authored three Ayn Rand titles for Cliff Notes, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, and Anthem, and The Penguin's Teacher's Guide to the Fountainhead. He works with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org, and he has his own website, Andrew Bernstein, Andrew Bernstein.net, is it?
.net.
Dr. Andrew Bernstein, welcome back. I'm pleased to have you on the program again today. And you've written this op-ed piece saying that we have been too soft in Iraq. You want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, there's two points I'd want to make, and it's not primarily about Iraq. I thought all along that President Bush made a mistake in targeting Iraq as our main enemy, when I think the Iranian regime, the Ayatollahs, have been our main enemy since the Khomeini Revolution in 1979.
Yeah, but they have an actual air force, an actual army. They haven't been the victims of 8 years of sanctions. They may even have a nuclear weapon. I mean, they're much more powerful than Iraq.
Yeah, and they fomented terrorism for decades now. I mean, it's official state policy. They not only sponsor Hezbollah, but I mean, they have conventions of terrorists in Tehran the way we have conventions of Shriners in Philadelphia. It's been their stated ideology for 25 years to foment terrorism against the West, and also President Bush, and not just Bush. I mean, his predecessors in office seem to think the Saudi regime is a friend of the United States, whereas at the very least they turn the they turn away from the Wahhabist schools in Saudi Arabia and let them continue to be breeding grounds for anti-Western, anti-American terrorists.
Well, do you think that might have something to do with the fact that the Saudi government and the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family collectively have contributed $1.43 billion to the fortunes of the Bush family over the last 25 years?
I don't know the ins and outs of the corruption, but I know that American presidents, because it's not just Bush, he's bad enough, but I mean, other presidents too have kissed up to the Saudis, and
because they've had our oil, and that boils it down to
oil.
Yeah, should America imitate the brutal imperial tactics of Hitler? I mean, should we be putting a heavy foot down in the Middle East and imperious Rex here, in order to protect our oil supplies, or should we be developing alternative energy sources here in the United States and making ourselves independent of Middle East oil, as Jimmy Carter tried to do back in the 80s, in the 70s, when we were only importing 10-11% of our oil from the Middle East, and now it's 50% of our imports now are coming from the Middle East. I mean,
developing independent means of energy and not being dependent on the Arabs. But I think the two points here. One is that I think this morally is a war of self-defense. We've been under attack for 25 years, or maybe more, going back to Arafat's murder of U.S. diplomats in Khartoum in 73. So at least 25 or 30 years of attack. So I don't see that as an imperialistic war. I don't want to conquer the Middle East. I'm not Ann Coulter. You know, I just want to destroy the regimes that sponsor terrorism against America and then get the hell out. But I think the main point I want to make is this, is that we need to fight and win the moral, philosophical battle, even more than the military battle. I think what makes our enemies dangerous fundamentally is their ideology, not their weapon systems. I mean, think of especially the Islamists, whether they're Sunni or Shiite, whether it's Khomeini, Bin Laden, the Taliban. I mean, these guys believe in a one-world Islamist theocratic dictatorship. They seek to destroy the West and establish theocracy, and we need to explicitly fight for Western civilization.
Secularism,
individual rights, freedom.
You know, broadly, I don't disagree with you, except for the fact that you say these guys view this one-world secular as they are theocratic. Actually, the Wahhabists, by and large, are... Yeah, to some extent, they're evangelists, but they are racial evangelists, as it were. I mean, before I get into that, let me just read a quote to you. I mean, this is the road that I think you're traveling down. I sought no war. On the contrary, I did everything to avoid it. But I would have been forgetful of my duty and responsibility if I had failed to draw the only possible conclusions in view of the mortal danger. I decided, if possible, a few days before the outbreak of this moral struggle, to give the signal to attack myself. Today we have overwhelming and authentic proof that they intended to attack us. In view of the great danger, the proportions to which we realize perhaps only today to the fullest extent, I can thank God that He enlightened me at the proper time and that He gave me the strength to do what had to be done. Had we not faced the enemy with their soldiers in arms, a flood would have swept over us, which once and for all would have finished the ridiculous idea of maintaining a balance of power in all its senselessness and stupid tradition. That is from Adolf Hitler's declaration of war against the United States.
Well,
how is this different?
Hitler was not under attack from the United States.
He claimed he was. He claimed that everything he was doing was preemptive war. I mean, you're saying, okay, well, you've got a diplomat who was killed. I mean, Hitler was pointing. He's got this. Actually, he has this long list. It's about 30 paragraphs of individual incidents of, you know, we took this ship out, we took that ship out, we killed this guy, we snatched this guy. You know, he's a long list. I mean, this thing is like 9 pages long, his declaration of war against us.
See, Tom, I think the exact opposite is true. I think the West should have engaged in preemptive war against Hitler in the 1930s.
How does that make us morally? Let's not refight World War II. But how does preemptive war make us morally superior? I agree with your point that what we're fighting here is a thought virus, not guns. I mean, you know, it's a thought virus that activates guns. It's sort of a variation on the people kill people, not guns kill people. Okay, we agree on that. But it sounds to me like your prescription is to go in and use violence to convince them of the rightness of our nonviolence.
No, I wouldn't put it in those terms. What I think is, if somebody's ideology, two points. One, if somebody's ideology calls for their conquest of you, and two, they're building up militarily to attack you, as Hitler was, I certainly think the West had the right to take him out and should have. And I think it's the same thing with the Islamists today. They have an ideology that wants to destroy the West. They've been saying it for decades. And they don't have the military strength Hitler had to attack us, so they sponsor terrorist organizations to attack us.
But
they still kill thousands of people. And God help us, if they get a nuke into New York City, they'll detonate it and kill God knows how many Americans.
Yeah, and
that's why we have the moral right to defend ourselves against that. That's my thinking.
And we have discussed on this program, you know, the possibility that may actually be several nukes inside the United States that they're planning to detonate just before the elections or in that time period.
It's not impossible, unfortunately.
No,
tragically,
I mean,
it's not impossible.
Larry Klayman's running around saying it's you know, the open secret in Washington, D.C. But the point is that this is not a state that by and large is doing this. This is a religion. And here in the United States, the largest cache stash of terrorist devices was discovered about, what, 6 months ago in Texas, where they
right.
found this guy that had like thousands of pounds of plastic explosive and machine guns and maps and diagrams of how to blow up federal buildings and this, that, and the, I mean, it was a major extremist terrorist cell that was preparing to attack America. Got almost no coverage in the press. Why? Because the guy was a white Christian.
Well, you may be right about the media, but I mean, I would do the same thing to a guy like that we did to McVeigh, you know, and that is execute somebody like that. I don't care what color he is or what religion he is. I think we have the right to defend ourselves against any of these bastards, no matter what ideology is motivating them. And I think the same thing is true of attacking Iran and toppling the Ayatollahs, who are more than anybody, I think, responsible for the war against the
okay. Well, see, here, there's where your A goes to B equals C in my mind falls down. I agree with you that we absolutely must defend ourselves. I am absolutely in favor of taking strong action against these folks. However, I think history tells us that states, when they invade other states, always have grand rationalizations, and a lot of civilians get killed in the process, and you end up kicking over the beehive, and now you got the bees all over you.
Well, I understand that, Tom, but I think the alternative is to let the Ayatollahs remain in power in Iran and continue to sponsor terrorism, and God knows how many American civilians will be killed.
But the Ayatollahs are in trouble right now, Andrew.
That's good news.
Why shouldn't we instead be encouraging the same way that they're sending off money to terrorists? You know, the Saddam was sending $25,000 to anybody in Palestine, in Israel, who blew themselves up. Why don't we support? And I'm sure we are actually support those who, or maybe we're not, because if they, you know, if it became public knowledge that we were, it would put them at risk. But why don't we support more overtly the pro-democracy movement inside Iran rather than going in with guns?
Well, I'm all in favor of that, Tom. The Ayatollahs have to come down.
But you're impatient.
To be safe. And I don't know that Bush is actually, or the CIA is actually funding, training, providing literature to the pro-freedom movement, the dissident movement in Iran. I agree with you. The dissident movement in Iran is very serious. I think the Ayatollahs are in trouble. I think the best news for us is that regime is going to come down eventually.
But if we attack them, dissidents will turn against us.
Get our main enemy out of power.
But see, if we attack them, if we attack Iran militarily, those very dissidents, because they are nationalists, because they are in favor of their nation, will turn against us the same way that what happened in Iraq did. Let's take a caller here. 1-866-889-8894. Kodak in Durham, North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak, you're live with Dr. Andrew Bernstein.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. My question is, first time I asked a question and give a response as to why my question is such. Everyone here is very learned and scholarly, but we seem to all forget about history. And my question is, why aren't we following more of the lines of Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King, in order to provide or come about resolutions to not just address this problem? Why don't we address the issue? I don't hear anyone talking about exactly what are the grievances. And the reason I say that, we look at all the great empires throughout history. All of them that who have tried to conquer have always ended up failing. And if we haven't learned anything from this whole scenario, which would hopefully would come out in one of these commission reports, we should learn that the status quo of the grumpy old man running this country has not worked.
Yeah, it has. So okay, good point, Kodak. Kodak, we've just got 30 seconds left, and Dr. Bernstein needs to leave at this break, so I want to give him a chance to just respond to you. Andrew Bernstein?
Well, I just want to say again, I think our enemies are motivated by an ideology, not by specific grievances. They're religious fanatics. They want basically conquer the world, establish an Islamist theocracy. We have the right to defend ourselves against them by any means possible. The Iranian regime is our main enemy. We have the moral right to take them down by whatever means it takes in order to defend our lives, not to conquer them. I don't want to conquer Iran. I simply want to defend America. That's all.
Okay. Dr. Andrew Bernstein, andrewbernstein.net.
Thanks, Tom.
Is your website, and also ayanrand.org. Thank you, Andrew, for being on. Thanks, Kodak, for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom Hartman with you. 20 minutes past the hour. Transforming the world, yes, by revitalizing, as in bringing back to life, democracy. What a great idea.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
an ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, a call to take back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Goodbye, George. George, goodbye, goodbye.
Oh, let's hope. No, actually, let's make it happen. Are you registered to vote?
You gotta go. Too bad. Goodbye, goodbye.
Did you notice one county, Hamilton County, Ohio, just purged 110,000 people from their voting rolls because some were felons and others hadn't voted in 4 years. This county has twice the percentage of African Americans of the average for the state of Ohio. 23%. Oh, what's going on across the country? Yeah, I ask that rhetorically. I think we have a sense of it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to hop in and get into this topic. Why are we in Iraq? What is it? You know, yesterday, and in Iran, for that matter. Here we've got a country that has Iraq, perhaps the largest oil reserves on earth. Officially second to Saudi Arabia, but most in the oil industry are saying, actually, no, Iraq has more than Saudi Arabia. And a lot of it hasn't even been discovered. And then you've got Iran, which is maybe fifth or sixth in the world in terms of oil supply. And yesterday we reported on this program, and it was reported broadly and widely in the news, I think, that the Minister of Defense of Iraq, a country without an army or an air force, that the Minister of Defense of Iraq, a country where 14 permanent U.S. bases are being built, which will house over 100,000 American soldiers, has claimed the right to preemptively strike Iran because they represent a threat to his country. And at the same time, you've got this 9/11 Commission report coming out saying some of the hijackers passed through Iran on their way to the United States. And so George Bush is talking about Iran. You know, it's really starting to get spooky. And I wonder if you know we need to be saying to George, fool me once, shame on you; fool me twice, shame on me. Or of course, as George said it.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee. That says, "Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again."
Yeah, there you go. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jerry in North Carolina. Oh, Jerry just dropped off. So Dave in Humboldt County. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, Tom, George is not always as articulate as we might hope, but I believe your first guest there, he seems to hold a notion that is really very prevalent, that we are the United States. As such, we are right. And as such, we have the right to kind of impose ourselves, our will, on the rest of the world.
Yeah, see, this is the right-wing machine getting their trial balloons and their talking points out there. And some folks say, well, you know, how come you're giving him space on your show? And, of course, the reason is that I think it's really important that we understand what the right-wing machine is up to.
I see, and that's definitely needed. I feel like the reality we need to look at is that while we're a very small percentage of the planet, the United States is, we are by far the greatest consumers. We have acquired much of the wealth of the world, and the present government that we have is rapidly attempting to accelerate and escalate that phenomenon, grab everything that they possibly can.
Yeah, and, you know, it was Richard Nixon, Dave, who said the United States is 5% of the world's population, yet we consume 25% of the world's resources. This can't last. It's Richard Nixon who said that.
Yeah, but now we want to, like Bechtel, attempting to get control of the water of the poorest countries in the world.
Oh, I know. It's
sell it back to them.
It's mind-boggling. And it won't work. It won't work. The idea of America as an imperialist nation doesn't work. It never has worked in history. You know, short-term, yeah. But long-term, no. It's not good for our children or our grandchildren. Tom Harbin with you, 29 minutes past the hour. Dave, thanks for the call. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You see everything.
And welcome back. 26 6.5 minutes before the hour. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MACS, 1-800-511-MAX. Futures Benjamin Krim, which you can call for a free audio, 888-242-8272. And the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, CASCR.org. CASCR.org. On this day, yesterday, actually, I go back to yesterday because Rama Schneider and I are having this discussion. It started on Monday when he was in here running the board, answering the phones, and engineering our show. And, there are those, I just can't resist it. We've all seen that picture of Neil Armstrong walking down the steps of the Apollo lander onto the surface of the moon. One little step for man, one giant step for mankind. And the first man on the moon. And the question that I keep asking is, who took the picture? And Rama's like, well, no, they had to have mounted a camera outside the spaceship. And I'm like, well, you do that, it gets burned up when you go through the atmosphere. I don't think that's possible. And so anyway, we've been I'm not completely wed to the conspiracy theory on this thing at all. I just think it's one of the more interesting ones out there. And it's a question that, yeah, it's worth raising. Anyhow, today, on this day in history, the so-called monkey trial, John T. Scopes, the high school teacher in Dayton, Tennessee, was convicted. Many people think that he actually won that trial. Clarence Darrow defending him. Clarence Darrow actually lost it. He was convicted for violating the state law for teaching Darwin's theory of evolution. Nice email here from Norway. Brian writes, I am an American expat, and I try to listen as often as I can. Thanks, Tom. You're my source of sanity and a counter to my right-wing extremist brother with his pro-Bush blog. Keep at it, Brian. And great to hear that Norway is listening. My father's parents both came from Norway to the United States in 1917, and so Norway has a fond spot in my heart. Time for a Cheney alert, and instead of theme music for our Cheney alert, I think we'll just play the transcript of that phone call when Dick Cheney called John Edwards to welcome him to the presidential race.
I've been waiting for you. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. I am the master.
Yes, our Cheney alert, from the master. Again, talking about these moments in history, going back to the past, this not so far back. This isn't as far back as the lunar landing. This is only from 1998, 6 years ago. The headline, former U.S. Defense Secretary says Iran and Libyan sanctions are wrong. Kuala Lumpur, April 20th, 1998. Bill Clinton was president. Former United States Defense Secretary Dick Cheney today hit out at his government for imposing unilateral economic sanctions like the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act, saying they have been, quote, ineffective and do not provide the desired results and are a bad policy, end quote. Cheney went on to say, I have made it clear that our U.S. unilateral sanctions policy is wrong. When asked to comment on the Iran-Libya Act, which contains provisions for sanctions to be imposed by the U.S. against foreign companies, making investment beyond $20 million a year in the oil and gas sector of the targeted countries. He was, of course, at that time president of Halliburton. And the Daily Misleader notes, on the same day that President Bush announced plans to investigate Iran for ties to terrorism, Halliburton acknowledged that a U.S. grand jury issued a subpoena to the company seeking information about its Cayman Island unit's work in Iran, where it is illegal for U.S. companies to operate. And goes on. I'll share a little more with you about this in just a moment. Let's get a listener's thought on this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 22 minutes before the hour. Tony in Waukegan, Illinois is on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey. You were just talking about the conspiracy about people not landing really on the moon.
Yeah, sort of tongue-in-cheek. I believe we actually landed on the moon.
Well, actually, I've been able to actually meet one of the astronauts that was actually there. And that was...
You mean who says he was there?
Huh?
You mean who says he was there?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you know he was there? Were you there with him?
Well, you know, you have to look at certain things, and you just have to just...
I know. I'm pulling your chain here, Tony. I'm just teasing you.
Oh, okay. Well, see, here's the problem. I teach high school, right?
Right.
And I teach astronomy, and I teach chemistry. And so every year I get kids who trot out the Fox special. I think that Fox special has done more to dumb down our nation.
Fox did a special on this?
Yes.
Oh, I had no idea.
Good Lord, man. This is where that thing came from. Or at least that's where it manifested so that the general population brought it out.
Surprise!
Yeah. They did a special on this thing like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, questioning the veracity of, you know, did we land on the moon and all this.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I guarantee you, if you go online and type in, you know, the lunar conspiracy or something like that into Google or Nexus or any of those, you're bound to find video of this.
Well, that's the thing. Rama was here on Monday, and he made the comment that it was the anniversary was coming up, you know, the next day of the lunar landing, and he said that he had gone into Google and he typed in something about the lunar landing, and all the hits were conspiracy sites saying that there was no such thing. And so I responded to him by saying, I mean, I was just standing there. I says, well, how do you know it actually happened? And all of a sudden, he just, you know, his face turns red. No, wait a minute, Tom. You know, it's real. And I'm like, well, how do you know? And I mean, I'm just making a joke about it. I didn't realize that Fox had actually produced a special on this thing. I mean,
it's an abomination to science. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of stuff.
No, there's no doubt in my mind, Tony. It really happened. But maybe you can answer the question. How did that picture get taken?
Okay, here's what they did. They knew with a site that they wanted to land, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of this had been going on for a long time. And
so they flew a film crew in there the day before.
No, not a film crew. What they did is they actually had robotic cameras that they had landed on the site beforehand. They had already sent...
Seriously? Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, the thing was scripted. There's no doubt about it. They wanted to, you know, they wanted to put America as being, you know, the prime movers on the moon. So what they did is they literally shot, because they had been taking, you know, they had been sending rockets up there, and they had had them landing on the surface to try and figure out where would be the best place to actually, you know, land. And so they figured out that the Sea of Tranquility would be the best place for this particular landing.
But the Sea of Tranquility is like, you know, eight times the size of the Grand Canyon. I mean, how do you make sure that you got the camera right where the lander is going to come down?
Well, pretty much the same way you do anything else. You have to keep in mind, all of these bodies are traveling at literally thousands of miles per hour through space.
Well, per second through space.
So the mathematics of it is pretty clear, and you just have to do it. I mean, it's just like anything else. It's all mathematics. It's all timing. And if anything does go wrong, well, it's your butt. But, you know, it worked out.
Yeah. So, well,
I mean,
that's
we've
interesting.
We've got evidence from the surface of the moon. We've got reflectors on the surface of the moon, and we bounce lasers off the thing. That's how we can tell that the moon is actually moving away from the Earth at about an inch and a half per year.
Oh, interesting. Because we put metal surfaces. Maybe the metal surfaces are just settling into the lunar dust.
I'm sorry?
Maybe the reflectors are simply settling into the lunar dust at the rate of an inch and a half a year.
No, actually, that would... Well, actually, that might account for that, but I suspect that, you know, once you're on the surface, unless you have something to disturb it, it's going to be sitting where it's sitting. There's no wind. There's no atmosphere. You mentioned before, how would they get it through the moon's atmosphere? The moon doesn't have an atmosphere.
No, I didn't mean the moon's atmosphere. I meant the Earth's atmosphere.
Before
you get to the Earth, moon, you got
a big deal in terms of heat and friction and things. And keep in mind, too, that these would have been, like, enclosed in a sealed canister until they got to the point where they would be deployed. I mean, it's just like we do ships today, you know, just like we send rockets out now.
Okay. Well, I'm absolutely willing to believe that we actually landed on the moon. In fact, I always have believed that. It was a tongue-in-cheek comment. I'm really glad that you answered my question, because nobody has ever been able to. I mean, I ask that question, I get this deer in headlights look from people. You know, how did we get the picture of the first guy, you know, from outside? And,
well, it's not a bad question. It's definitely one that needs to be asked.
Yeah.
But I do want to say one thing to you.
Sure.
And that is, I went to go see the movie The Day After Tomorrow.
Yes.
And let me tell you, the first time I heard you speak, very first day I ever heard your show, you were talking about this great conveyor.
Yeah, I've actually written about it in two of my books.
Before I heard your show. And then I did some reading, and they did it in Popular Science, and then they talk about it in the movie. And I'm sitting there going, wow, that's pretty cool. I never heard of this thing. But evidently, yeah. The people who I'm sorry, that's my computer. The people who run, who study this stuff, they must know something about it. And
yeah, this is relatively new science. It mostly came out of the ice core drillings in Greenland about 10 years ago. And I, in my book, The Edison Gene, and in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, they both have a chapter about it. And I interviewed one of the scientists who was on that team, and I interviewed a couple of other scientists. William Calvin wrote A Brain for All Seasons about punctuated evolution and human evolution, the evolution of the human brain as a result of rapid climate change. And this is very new science. I mean, it's just literally in the last decade that they figured out that ice ages come and go in a two-year period. That's how long it takes for the Atlantic to cool down once the Great Conveyor Belt shuts down. So it wouldn't go as fast as we saw in the movie The Day After Tomorrow, but it would happen fast enough to certainly disrupt civilization, and apparently has in the past. So anyhow, Tony, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us there in Waukegan, Illinois. How are you listening to the show, by the way?
Actually, I'm on Sirius.
Oh, great, great, wonderful. Okay, thanks, Tony. 15 minutes before the hour. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Halliburton acknowledged, just back to our Cheney alert, I just want to wrap this thing up. Cheney says, or said back in 98 when he was attacking the U.S. sanctions policy. Well, you know, he couldn't change the U.S. sanctions policy against his company, Halliburton, doing business with Iran or with Saddam. And so what he did was he reincorporated Kellogg, Brown, and Root, and renamed it KBR, reincorporated them in the Caymans. They got a post office box down there and a lawyer, and said, now we're not an American company anymore, and so the American laws don't apply to us, and we don't have to pay American taxes. Although we have our offices in Texas, and our executives, and I'll still draw a paycheck here in the United States, and therefore we can do business with Saddam and with Iran, as Halliburton has been doing, and started doing under the wise tutelage of Darth Vader Cheney. And so during the 2000 campaign, Cheney also claimed that as Halliburton CEO, quote, I had a firm policy that we wouldn't do anything in Iraq, even arrangements that were supposedly legal, end quote. This is what he said in the campaign. Yet earlier this year, the New Yorker reported that, quote, during Cheney's tenure at Halliburton, the company did business with Iraq as well. The Washington Post reported that they did $78 million worth of business with Saddam Hussein while Cheney was the head of the company. You want to go after somebody who's giving money to Saddam Hussein, who's doing business with Saddam Hussein? Don't go after al-Qaeda. Go after Dick Cheney. 1-866-889-8894. Jerry in Bellevue, Washington's on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about who took the pictures.
Oh, okay. Boy, that's a hot topic. It's
well, yeah. I too have met one of the people who claimed they were there.
Uh-huh.
Although I did not ask him about this. But the lunar module had four legs.
Right.
And one leg had the ladder on it.
Right.
That they came down.
Right.
And one of the other legs had the TV camera mounted on it. And in fact, I think if you listen to the coverage a few minutes before Neil actually goes out, there's actually a comment made that they have to flip some switch inside the lunar module to actually turn the camera on.
Well, now wait a second. I mean, just visualize this. You're sitting in your car, and you're going to step out of the car on the driver's side. And
right.
And you've got a camera attached to one of the wheels, right? Functionally the same thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, more or less.
How is that camera going to take a picture of you that looks like it's from a distance?
Probably with a very wide angle lens, because you'd want to account for the fact that you don't really have much control over where the camera's going to point. Since I think it was actually on some type of bracket or something like that.
Yeah, okay. I can see a robotic arm going.
I have to look. I'm
something.
Sitting here in my office, and I've actually got a book about the lunar module. I should have looked it up.
Yeah, there you go.
Before this.
Okay. Well, it's interesting stuff. It's interesting stuff. Jerry, I got to move along.
The real question is how come there are no pictures of Buzz Aldrin?
He was the second guy, right?
Yeah, he was the second guy. There's no pictures of him on the moon.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Boy, the conspiracy thickens here. Jerry, thanks, thanks for the call.
He had the camera.
Oh, I see. Oh, so he was actually the first guy before the first
guy. He took all the pictures of Neil.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Okay.
Good to hear from you. Nick in Northern Michigan's on the line. Hey, Nick, what's up?
I just have a quick comment and would like you to maybe see what you can come up with on a piece I saw the other day on the History Channel I was watching, and it was called Soldiers for Hire.
Right.
And if you're familiar with it, and something that really alarmed me is, you know, when we see the, you know, reports and everything, they say we have 20 to 30,000 so-called, you know, private contractors.
Right. Mercenaries.
Whatever you want to call them over in Iraq.
Yeah.
But this was a piece on mercenaries and their origins and where they came from. Now, during the course of this two-hour program.
Got about 10 seconds here, Nick.
Okay, I guess what I'm getting at is it said Halliburton has over 100,000 mercenaries.
Oh, interesting.
Private army throughout the world, and that's just the one company, not including all the other ones.
Yeah, this is a major problem, Nick, and in fact, in the next hour of the program, I've got a really good piece about the problem that this is causing the American army that I want to talk about. Thanks for the call and raising the issue. 10 minutes before the hour.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. Recently, a group of workers gathered in the Garment District in New York City to launch the Ain't I a Woman campaign, a national boycott against Liberty Apparel, Rebecca Miles was there.
The campaign demands that the manufacturer be accountable to their subcontracted workers. In 1999, 26 garment workers sued Liberty Apparel for sweatshop conditions in their U.S. contracted factories and failure to pay minimum wage. Many workers, when paid, were earning $3 an hour. Anna Chong from the Ain't I a Woman campaign.
It's been 5 years. For 5 years, they still refuse to pay their workers. Their kids are grown and they have not received a single cent. By not paying these workers, they're actually trying to change the law. They're actually trying to change the Fair Labor Standards Act. And because this will affect workers across the country, this boycott is also about holding all manufacturers accountable and all companies that subcontract accountable, and for them to stop hiding behind the subcontracting system.
What concerns workers is the increase in subcontracting, especially where subcontractors are not accountable when accidents happen on the job, or where the company suddenly disappears when there is any kind of protest, as in the case of Liberty Apparel and its subcontractor. David Ting, a high school student whose mother worked long hours in a nail salon.
The subcontracting system is now limited to the garment industry. White-collar workers such as lawyers and paralegals are employed through temp agencies. And although they are well paid, they have absolutely no control of their working hours and may work for years without contract.
We were unable to contact Liberty Apparel Company as the line was constantly busy. Their clothing line is sold in outlets like Conway and Family Dollar for families on tight incomes. And ironically, it is durable clothing for workers and hunters. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour. We've got a couple of callers here and only about 3 minutes before the end of the show. So I'm going to ask you both, Jim in California and Shannon in Oklahoma, to be really brief. We'll go to Jim first. 1-866-889-8894. Go ahead, Jim.
Good morning, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you if you could comment a little bit on the Joe Wilson's situation and where that is in the news.
Yeah, well, it looks from the 9/11 Commission report that his wife actually played some role in recommending him to go to Africa, but that has nothing to do with the fact that the administration outed a CIA operation in punishment for his writing the op-ed piece in the New York Times. I mean, the outing may have been. It may have been accurate to say that his wife played some role in it, but it's a felony. You don't out a CIA agent. So they're trying to change the subject, that's all. I mean, it's very, very rapidly, very hysterically, very frantically trying to say. It's the same reason that this whole Sandy Berger thing is being released right now, 9 weeks into the investigation. The reason why is because yesterday Halliburton and Dick Cheney were subpoenaed over doing business with Iran 5 years ago. And they didn't want that to make the news cycle either. So what's going to be a hot one? Well, former Clinton aide was stuffing stuff in his pants, you know, classified. And that turns out to be an exaggeration. He apparently put it in his briefcase.
Do you think we'll ever get to the bottom of it?
I, God only knows. I don't. You know, one can hope. Let's go to Shannon in Oklahoma. Thanks for the call, Jim, by the way. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good, good. I wrote this down so it'd be quick, but it's going to take about 60 seconds. If I got time?
Yeah.
Okay. 2,000 years ago, in the midst of a cruel and oppressive Roman hierarchical rule over not only the Jewish people, but also over the entire then modern world, a single man started a movement that challenged one man's authority over any other man. He stated in...
Hey, Jim, instead of reading it, why don't you just tell me what your point is?
Well, my point is that it seems like there's so much support from the Christians today for George Bush, and it seems like he's exactly the opposite of what Jesus taught at all.
Yeah, that's my sense of it as well. He's not into turning the other cheek forgiving or working. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like he's
the Romans.
Huh?
He's the Romans. I mean, he's taking the position of the...
Yeah.
We are empire!
Exactly, and they support him because he'll get up in public and say the word Jesus, but he's using it for exactly the opposite of what Jesus had intended with his message.
Yeah, I believe so, and I think that anybody who is serious about their Christianity needs to go back and read the 24th, 25th chapter. I forget which one it is. I think it's the 24th chapter of Matthew, where Jesus actually says, this is what you've got to do if you want to get into heaven, and just lays it out unambiguously. Care for the poor, feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, visit people when they're in prison. I mean, it's just he lays it out. It is unambiguous. There's no nonsense. And this administration's completely missed it.
Tom, I want your other 2 hours in the afternoon. We've only got you for 1 hour here on Sirius.
Well, you got to talk to the Sirius folks about that. We're glad to have that hour. Thanks for the call, Shannon.
Thank you.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class-action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again.
Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Time for another Gooberhead Award, presented periodically to someone whose tongue is going 100 miles an hour, but who forgot to put their brain in gear. Today's goober is John Cornyn, a little-known U.S. senator from Texas who's trying to become a big name by rewriting the constitutional genius of the founders. Ignorance is a bad quality in a public official, but add arrogance and you've got a dangerous goober on your hands. John's all puffed up with the fumes of arrogance because he's chairman of the Senate's Constitution Subcommittee. The best public service one can offer in this position is to kill politically inspired amendments that other Congress critters are always tossing out, especially in election years. Instead, Cornyn himself has become the premier political posturer, using his position to propose not one or two amendments, but five. For example, he wants to allow members of Congress to be appointed rather than democratically elected in the event that some are killed in a terrorist attack. This has already been overwhelmingly rejected by the Republican-controlled House on the basis that it's undemocratic, unnecessary, and, well, silly. Of course, he also trots out the old right-wing war cry for an amendment banning flag burning, claiming that the 9/11 terrorist attacks necessitate this restriction on the people's right to free speech. In addition, he's pushing one to ban same-sex marriages, an odd assertion of big government power over individuals by a so-called conservative, not to mention that it would make rank discrimination constitutional. My favorite Cornynism, though, is his push for a balanced budget amendment, outlawing deficit spending. This from a guy who has voted for every one of George Bush's budget-busting boondoggles, from Star Wars to tax giveaways for the rich, creating a budget that's now $500 million in the red. If you want a balanced budget, John, just vote for one. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a goober. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, on February 8th, our erstwhile president said, "I'm a war president. I make decisions here in the Oval Office in foreign policy matters with war on my mind." And didn't poll so well. So on July 20th, he said, "I want to be the peace president." And that seemed to confuse people. So last week, Colin Powell said, "Sometimes we extend the peace by using war." So now it's all becoming quite evident. And of course, the earlier comment by W.
"When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace."
Yeah. You can have it always. Are we committed to the rule of law or to power at any cost? Last night I was, we had dinner with an old friend who actually used to work in the White House in the Clinton administration. And he made the comment to me, and I, you know, I want to give him credit for it. It's, although this is something we've talked about many times before, but he distilled it so well. I thought it was worth sharing. He made the comment that when you begin to believe that the ends justify the means, you have lost connection to the rule of law. And when you lose connection to the rule of law, democracy is doomed. And his point was that, in his personal opinion, the people in the White House right now, and obviously the Republicans, I mean, clearly Denny Hastert, who is willing to break the law with regard to the House of Representatives, hold a vote open for 3 hours to get Medicaid through, or hold a vote open for an extra, you know, 20 minutes, 24 minutes to kill Bernie Sanders' provision, is his amendment, which was supported by Republicans, to delete some portions of the Patriot Act. They were certainly willing to go around the rules to that. When we're no longer committed to the rule of law, believing, as George Bush does, that the grand ends justify the means, then democracy's in trouble, not just here, but all around the world. And now we're taking steps to flaunt this. I mean, this goes beyond just, gee, what an idea. U.S. Economic Aid, this from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC, cbc.ca, CBC News. You know, I'm not sure why this wasn't more widely reported in the American press. Must be the liberal bias, right? Must be that liberal bias of the American press. U.S. economic aid could only flow to countries that have agreed not to surrender Americans to a world court for prosecution for war crimes under a measure the U.S. House of Representatives approved Thursday. This was last Thursday. The Republicans in Congress pushed through a piece of legislation which says, if your country wants to get our foreign aid, you must either withdraw from the International Treaty on War Crimes or commit that you're not going to go along with it, that you're going to break that law. The target of the amendment was the International Criminal Court, which began operating last year in The Hague, Netherlands. It's a permanent court that's supposed to enter cases involving genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity when the countries involved can't work out a solution on their own. And Tom DeLay says the court is, quote, a clear and present danger to the war on terrorism and Americans fighting it all over the world. I, you know, as I recall, Goebbels' idea about any attempt at international law. Some of the countries that are signatories to this, that we are threatening with foreign aid if they don't pull out, are Jordan, Turkey, South Africa, Kenya, Mexico, and Peru. As Representative Jim Colby, the Republican from Arizona, said, I don't see how that helps us in the war against terrorism. But so far, we've got 90 countries that have signed agreements with the United States saying that if we have an actual war criminal in the United States, somebody who has committed genocide or war crimes, and that person happens to visit one of these 90 countries, those countries will not turn that person over to the International Court at The Hague. They will not do that. We're going over the top, folks. We are going over the edge, around the corner. This is, you know, in the first hour I read Adolf Hitler's declaration of war against the United States, where he says, you know, you guys attacked us. We knew that you were going to attack us. We knew you were ready. We knew you were, and you took this ship and you took, and we were justified in a preemptive war against Poland, against the Soviet Union, against France, against, you know, against Norway, against, you know, and on and on it went. And, of course, the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia and Austria. Absolutely justified, he said. The last ruler in the last 200 years to use the doctrine of preemptive war to justify his acts. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. So, you know, here we are, the internet, and then it gets larger. You know, it's the rule of law. If you register to vote in Hamilton County, Ohio, a county that has about twice the African-American population of the rest of the state, if you register to vote in Hamilton County, Ohio, and you then fail to vote for 4 years, they take your name off the list. You know, I was busy. I was working at my job. I couldn't get the day off. I'm sorry. It's a Tuesday. You know, I couldn't make it down. I got there. The polls lines were too long. I had a babysitter. Sorry, you're off the list. Off the list. 105,000 voters purged because they had not voted in 4 years. In Hamilton County, Ohio. What is happening in America? What happened to the... Yeah. 14 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, just another snapshot of Bush's Jesus America, huh?
Yeah. Well, see, I'm not sure. I the question in my mind is this thing in Hamilton County, Ohio, something that's happening in every county in Ohio? Is there actually a law in Ohio that says if you don't vote in 4 years, your name gets taken off the list? If so, do the voters of Ohio know it? Do people, you know, are people told this when they sign up? Are they told when their name is taken off the list? Are they given any warning at all? These are things I'd like to know, and I hope that somebody is investigating.
Well, not only that, and I have another point I'd like to bring up, if I may, after this, but what means do they have for verifying that they're telling you the truth of who didn't vote, too?
No, that's a good one, too. Yeah.
But anyway, have you heard about the rift between Hollywood and Congress and the Bush regime?
Tell me about it.
It seems that Hollywood wants to do a weekly series on the Bush regime, and the Democrats are filibustering because the Republicans want to leave the concept in there of no-bid contracts. Have you heard about the name of this series?
I suspect this is going to be a good one. Go ahead. As long as it's not obscene.
Designing Crimes. That's the name of the series.
Like Designing Women. Okay. Good one, Armin.
One other thing. You want me to tell you how it's spelled?
Okay.
Dezioning crime.
That's a cheap shot. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm not into anti-Semitism. It's just not a useful thing. Twice the percentage of the state. Yeah, okay, we did that. The contest. We have been trying to figure out who was it. Who was the senator? We now know. We now know who is the senator that booked the Everett, the room in the Everett Senate building, named after Senator Dirksen, Everett Dirksen, I'm sorry, the Dirksen Senate office building, who, and see, only a senator can book these rooms. Not a senator's staff, but a senator. And somebody booked this room, and this was earlier in the year, March 11th, they sent the letter out, apparently. March 8th, yeah. I don't have the date here of when this thing actually happened, but it was April. Anyhow, it was March 23rd. The March 23rd is where the ceremony happened. And a bunch of members of Congress showed up. And two members of Congress carried gold crowns of the United States Congress, yes, the federal government, carried gold crowns to Reverend Moon and his wife and put them on their heads. And Reverend Moon said, and I quote, "Emperors, kings, and presidents have declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sung Myung Moon is none other than humanity's Savior, Messiah, returning Lord, and true parent." The group that requested this of Senator John Warner was a group called Christian Voice of Alexandria. Warner's staff person. Warner has finally confessed he was the guy, Republican senator from Virginia, former husband of Elizabeth Taylor. That in and of itself raises my antenna. Has Elvis left the building? Kind of, you know. Anyhow, nothing in the letter suggests any participation by Reverend Moon or his organization, says his staffer, this guy named Ulliott. Several co-sponsors were listed, including the Washington Times Foundation. So, of course, the Republicans thought it was just fine. Don't they realize the Washington Times is owned by Reverend Moon, that he loses money every year and has since he started this thing back during the Reagan administration, loses money every year keeping this thing and people like Tony Blankley who work for it afloat? So they get a letter from, you know, this Christian group with the Washington Times Foundation. Reverend Robert Grant, who is listed on Jarman's letter to Warner as chairman of Christian Voice, so the chairman of the group, also founded a group called the American Freedom Coalition. The American Freedom Coalition has received support from business interests of the Unification Church since its founding in April of 87. The American Freedom Corporation... A coalition has, in fact, received $5,252,473,000 from Reverend Moon. Gee, what a surprise. And they want to crown this guy Messiah. Well, it's not that they want to. They did. So our question that we've been asking here for months has been answered. It was Senator John Warner who made it all possible. 20 after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Start me up. Start me up.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, Benjamin Krim, and the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, CASCR, CASCR.org. Coach, no, it's not. It's Jerry Ayer, 1950, in our chat room. Maybe this will put this to rest. He says, from Chariots of Apollo, apparently a book by Charles R. Pellegrino and Joshua Stoff. See, the great stuff you miss if you're not in the chat room. There's a fascinating discussion about Linda Ronstadt, too. The latest attempt by the right wing to change the subject from Dick Cheney's being indicted or being investigated for doing business with Iran just before he became vice president. Anyhow, here's the quote from the book, Chariots for Apollo. Then Armstrong backed slowly, carefully down the nine rungs of the ladder. At the second to the last rung, he reached to his left and pulled a small ring. They deployed a camera from the side of the ship. And thus began the first live, albeit fuzzy, telecast from the moon. Huh, interesting. Thank you, Jerry Ayer. Appreciate that. 25 and a half minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And Coach Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Well, Tom, I was listening to the outrage over Bobby Fischer playing chess in Yugoslavia when it was under some kind of sanctions. And yet nobody seems to care that Cheney fixed it so he could do his company could do business with Iraq when they were a little more naughty than Yugoslavia, I think, at the time.
Oh, this is hypocrisy raised to the level of an art form, Glenn. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And not only that, I mean, you've got this now. We've got this thing with what do you call it, Cuba. And, you know, this interesting story, as it were, that George Bush goes into this thing about how, you know, oh, Cuba, it's they're you know, sex tourism, blah de blah de blah. And it turns out that it was some kid who wrote a college paper that he didn't footnote, in which he quoted Castro as saying, "We've got the best educated prostitutes in the world." And they go back and they interview this kid. And the White House uses this in Bush's speech, right, last weekend. They go back and accuses Cuba of promoting sex tourism, in fact, child sex tourism as a result. You know, and they go back to this kid and they say, "Where'd you get the quote?" And he says, "I don't know. I don't have a footnote for it." And they say, "Why'd you say he said it?" And the kid says, "Well, it was, you know, Castro was trying to point out that they've got one of the best educational systems in the country, in the world, and even the prostitutes are well-educated. But Castro had actually cracked down on prostitution. It's against the law in Cuba, and, of course, it happens. But it's against the law. It's not officially sanctioned." And Bush was wrong and it took it out of context. And the guy says, "You know, I'm really upset that they would take my quote and lie about it." And so, you know, welcome to the Bush administration, Glenn. I mean, this is...
We need an extradition treaty with the White House if we're going to extradite Bob Fischer from Japan and get Cheney out from under the basement, you know, down there with the toad poop.
Well, there you go. Right down there with the toad poop. That's where he needs to be. I can tell you've been hanging out in the chat room. It really is a shame. Glenn, thanks a lot for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Harry in Ann Arbor's on the line. Hey, Harry, we got about a minute. What's up?
Yeah. I was going to talk about Cheney and the industrial war complex. Eisenhower talked about it.
Yes.
And talk about doing business with Iran. Remember Ali North?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
paying them off for holding the hostages.
They got the hostages out.
Yeah. Yeah, and those weapons, those missiles, and those missiles were sold to Iran during the Reagan administration when there were no hostages.
Yeah,
you know,
it was
between the time that the hostages were released when Reagan was inaugurated and the time 2 years later when hostages were taken in Lebanon. And people kind of somehow missed that we were giving them arms for hostages when there were no hostages. Well, what hostages were they for? They were for the hostages that were held over during the last couple of months of the Carter administration so that Ronald Reagan could win the election, something that was set up,
exactly,
an October surprise set up by George W. Bush and Bill Casey, the former CIA director. Harry, thanks for the call. Yeah, this is what happens when the rule of law is no longer respected and you have an administration that believes the ends justify the means. Democracy is at risk. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You do or not what you say. If you're not part of the future, then get out of the way.
Is George Bush too liberal? A big concern, it appears, among Republicans, Republican activists in particular. George Bush too liberal, and the specifically, actually, not so much George Bush, but the Republican image that is being projected to the world. Because the Republican National Convention is going to feature Herr Gruppenführer, who is in favor of gay marriage and in favor of a woman's right to choose abortion, Herr Arnold. Arnold, who has had plastic surgery, wears more makeup than most women, poses in a bikini, has bikini waxes, and is not a girly man, this guy is going to be one of the main featured speakers at the Republican National Convention, followed by Family Values Rudy Giuliani, who moved his mistress into the mayor's mansion in New York City while he was mayor, kicked his wife out. Actually, they all three of them lived there for a short while, but his wife would have no part of it. And so she left, and he's now still with his mistress. And he also is in favor of abortion rights. And, geez, these liberal guys, these... George Bush has... Michael Frank of the Heritage Foundation says... Don't worry about it. This is just what you have to... He doesn't... These are my words, not his. Essentially, he's saying, don't worry. This is just... This is what you got to do to get the American people to vote for you. You got to lie to them. You got to present yourself as something other than what you are. Now, let me be the first to say, I think the Democrats are going to be doing the same thing. And I think it's a shame. I think that the Democrats should be talking about single-payer health care and getting out of Iraq and the issues that Dennis Kucinich talks about and the Ralph Nader talks about and the Howard Dean talked about and that, frankly, the majority of Americans want to hear. But they're gonna play it safe. And my hope is that after the election, that particularly John Edwards on the ticket, when Kerry and Edwards are president and vice president, that there will be enough pressure on Kerry to actually move in a progressive direction and bring this country back from the edge of disaster that Ronald Reagan took us to, George H.W. Bush took us further into, Bill Clinton in some ways moved us back from environmentally by and large, but economically continued the damage, and now George W. Bush is like driving this truck right off the edge of the cliff. Anyhow, Michael Frank of the Heritage Foundation, he says, and I quote, ultimately, Bush can say some extremely moderate things at the convention. Many swing voters will only be tuning in at the convention, and passions are so high that the base is not going to abandon Bush. Pretty straightforward. David Brooks, the conservative who writes for the New York Times on a lot of talk shows these days, one of America's most respected conservative columnists, called the 24,000 platform, quote, this was last, the last election, a parody of inclusiveness on stage, mostly black performers in the arena, white people in the stands, talking about the Republican convention. You can expect to see a repeat of that this year as well. So, more than half of the Republicans in the House of Representatives have now signed a letter to George W. Bush. Half of the Republicans in the House of Representatives complaining about the lack of conservative pro-life speakers in a primetime slot. You think Hillary not speaking in prime time is a big deal? This is their base. This is their core, and they're not sucking up to them. And these guys are upset. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, I was just listening to Right Wing Radio, and I found out that Linda Ronstadt is having Sandy Berger's love child, Michael Moore's been a midwife, and it's going to destroy John Kerry's presidential bid.
No doubt about it.
They're
the ones who actually landed on the moon, and they haven't come back yet.
Yeah. Just a quick request. If you could, if you get time today, or maybe even tomorrow, speak out again the results of the Republican primaries, I mean the ones that actually happened, because I caught just the end of it, and it just sounded fascinating, and I was sorry I missed it.
Yeah.
But if it's worth hearing again, I'd like to hear it again.
Okay, I'll do it after the next break, because I'm going to have to dig it out of the trash can, I think.
Okay, man. Have a good day.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the call, Chris. Good to hear from you. Yes, there were, in fact, Republican primaries, and George W. Bush lost big in many of them. I'll give you those details after the break. It's a good one. Back to this... Are we committed to the rule of law or to power at any cost? And you know, being committed to the rule of law, by and large, means telling the truth as well to we the people. And here we have now the situation trying to justify the Patriot Act. Yes, sneak and peeks are fine. We can come into your home without a warrant. See, the Fourth Amendment says that if you're gonna go into somebody's home, you have to first go before a judge and prove that there is probable cause to believe that person has committed a crime. That judge then issues a search warrant, and you may then execute that search warrant. This is what it says in the Constitution of the United States. But the Patriot Act says if a case involves terrorism, you can break into somebody's house as long as they're not home. And you can take things and you can search things as long as you do it in a way that they don't notice that you might have done it or you don't inform them of it. And you never, ever need to tell them, and you don't need a warrant or the permission of a judge. There's no judicial oversight. Now, trying to justify this and saying, you know, the Justice Department saying, yeah, well, this is really a good thing. I mean, you know, these sneak and peek provisions and the wiretap provision and the we can get your library records provision. Yeah, you know, the Constitution doesn't really like that kind of stuff, and James Madison's probably rolling over in his grave. But it's helping us catch terrorists. For example, in Iowa, we've got 35 terrorism-related cases. Everybody goes, oh, wow, 35 terrorism-related cases. I guess we need that Patriot Act. So the Des Moines Register, the newspaper there in Des Moines, Iowa, decided to check it out. Who were these cases? And first they went to U.S. District Judge Robert Pratt, the federal district judge in that area, you know, before whom the terrorism cases would be heard, and said, hey, you heard any of these 35 terrorism cases? He says, if there have been terrorism-related arrests in Iowa, I haven't heard about them. This is the judge that would have. Included in the 35 cases were 4 American-born laborers who omitted mention of prior drug convictions when they were assigned by a contractor to a runway project at the Des Moines Airport or when they applied for manual labor jobs there. This is a terrorism-related conviction, right? A guy who neglects to mention on his job application that he'd been busted for smoking dope. 5 Mexican citizens who stole cans of baby formula from store shelves throughout Iowa and sold them to a man of Arab descent for later resale. A five-finger discount ring, right? And 2 Pakistani men who entered into or solicited sham marriages so they and their friends could continue to live in the Waterloo, Iowa area and work at convenience stores. For this, we are giving up our civil liberties. For this, there must be no attention. We must forget about the Constitution of the United States. No, it doesn't matter. No, we've got to stop these guys who want to work at 7-Eleven. What has happened? to the America that I remember, that you remember. It has been Bushified, Cheneyized, and we have to take it back on November 2nd in the ballots, in the ballot box, in the voting booth. And it would be nice if we knew that the machines that we vote on are actually printing a paper ballot. I'm guessing they probably won't again in Georgia, the state that I am personally convinced the election was stolen in 2002. But there's no way that they can prove that it wasn't because there's no paper trail. Gee, I just don't buy it. I lived in Georgia for 18 years. I don't buy it that the citizens of Georgia voted in Saxby Chambliss, a draft dodger, and voted out Max Cleland, a veteran who left three limbs on the battlefield of Vietnam, over the issue of patriotism. I don't buy it. 1-866-889-8894. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, always an honor to talk to you, Tom. You're talking about losing freedoms a little bit earlier.
Yes.
I heard on C-SPAN the other day, and actually had read an article a couple of days, this guy blatantly saying that buses coming to the Democratic Convention from New Hampshire and a couple other states, they're just going to search you. There's, you know, no probable cause, no nothing. We're just going to search your bags and search you. And then I also read a recent article about how they're just having police stops to see if you have a license. And just, hey, do you have a license on you? And that, to me, doesn't seem very, I don't know, just very constitutional. They're just pulling you over and checking without probable cause. It's kind of scary. And they can do that under the guise of the Patriot Act.
Well, actually, that latter they can do under the Supreme Court actually ruled on this about a decade ago. And it's one of those rulings that makes me cringe. I have been in New York, actually. I was in a taxi one time. We were driving out to the airport and got caught just on the other side of the bridge, you know, or other side of the tunnel from New York City, in one of these police things where they just lock down all the streets. And what they're looking for is they ask for your driver's license and your insurance. And they are theoretically looking for intoxicated drivers. Or for people who are not wearing their seatbelts.
Right.
And the Supreme Court has said that, yes, because the roads are public, I can't explain the logic of this ruling, but because it's public roads, the police can stop you without any presumption that you've committed a crime, to see if you've committed a crime.
There was actually a woman who was pulled over at a stop like this, and she refused to give her ID. Offered to go down to the police station, asked to get a supervisor, and the cops admittedly told her, hey, you haven't broken any laws, but we have the right to check your ID. She didn't. They arrested her, but she won the court case. The judge said that she had the right not to give them.
Well, that may be, but in a he case this year, the United States Supreme Court, just a month or so ago, ruled in the case of a guy, I forget what state he was from, I think it was Texas, it might have been Nevada, who refused to identify himself. And the police came and said, what's your name? He said, I'm not telling you. His car was not even driving. It was pulled off to the side. And they said, you know, what's your name? And he said, you know, I'm not going to tell you. And they hauled him in, and they took this case to the Supreme Court. He was literally a cowboy. I mean, literally a guy who, you know, rides horses and chases cows. And he lost. He lost. The Supreme Court ruled that in America now, the police can walk up to you and demand identification, and if you don't produce it, you can go to jail, period.
Where are your papers, please? Can I see your papers,
exactly,
please?
Exactly. 1984 is here. 1984 is here. And that's one of the reasons why, in fact, that's, I think, probably the most important reason why the vote this year is one of the most important vote. It is the most important vote in my lifetime, and I think probably the most important vote since 1932. And that is because the next president of the United States is going to appoint at least three, certainly most likely four, and possibly even five members of the United States Supreme Court. And when they get on guys in their 50s, like Thomas was when he got on, they last for another 40 years. I mean, they last for another two generations. They're going to be influencing the Supreme Court until 2040. And it is absolutely vital that we not that you know, particularly with the kind of judicial nominees that George Bush has been putting up. I mean, people who are fascists, just openly fascists, that we not allow that to happen. That we have to, if for no other reason than just the Supreme Court. And of course, there's lots of other reasons. Let's get our environment back. Let's get our commons back. Let's make the economy work. Let's, you know, reinvigorate stem cell research and other good science. Let's take care of the global warming. It's a long, long list. And let's get our civil liberties back. But the Supreme Court is the biggest reason. Brian, get active.
Let's get out there and vote, everybody. That's what it comes down to.
And please, you, get 10 people to vote.
Oh, I'm getting 20 or 30.
Okay. Good on you, Brian. Thanks for the call. Good to hear
from
you.
Have a good one.
So this, yes, 35 terrorism-related cases in Iowa, says the Justice Department. Pakistani men who have solicited marriages so that they could continue to work in convenience stores. Senator Charles Grassley, the Republican of Iowa, says, and I quote, "When people read that they're doctoring the numbers, aren't they going to have less confidence in the Justice Department and the war on terror? You can't say somebody's a terrorist when he isn't a terrorist." Well, Senator Grassley, sorry to pop your balloon here, but John Ashcroft can! He's perfectly willing to lie to us! Well, this is Senator Grassley of Iowa. I didn't think that people would actually lie. Well, sorry, it has happened. In the two full years, reports the Des Moines Register, before the 9/11 attacks, there were no federal criminal prosecutions in Iowa related to terrorism, according to a Justice Department database obtained by researchers affiliated with Syracuse University. When four Iowans were indicted on January 29, 2003, for making false statements to airport officials on job documents, the cases were marked anti-terrorism. All four were released on bail while awaiting trial. These are serious terrorists. Lawyers for the men said they could not recall hearing, either in court or during plea discussions, any allegations from prosecutors about terrorist motives. Most of the defendants contended they had signed the airport job application forms without reading them or had misunderstood the disclosures they were required to make as part of their jobs or the job applications. Two of the airport suspects were found not guilty by a jury. Another case was dismissed when the defendant agreed to report to a probation officer. The fourth man, an applicant for a freight handling job, pleaded guilty and was placed on probation. This is, are we committed to the rule of law in the United States or to power at any cost? Increasingly, it's seeming the latter, which could be the death knell of democracy unless we get active, my friends, unless we get active. But wake up, the American people. 10 minutes before the hour.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. 49 New Jersey environmental groups in the Save New Jersey Coalition are urging Governor James McGreevy to veto the so-called Fast Track Development Bill. The bill would grant developers fast approvals on building permits. Rebecca Miles reports.
The coalition claims the bill is unconstitutional as it radically changes the permitting system in New Jersey, and many see it as railroading 30 years of environmental protection. I asked Jeff Tittle, director of New Jersey's Sierra Club, what the bill would do if passed.
It allows developers and polluters to be able to have fast-track approval for permitting from DEP and other agencies, including transportation. And what it really means is that in that 45-day clock, the public has no right to comment on permits that may affect their lives and their property and their public and their health.
What many are angry about is that this comes after a long battle to get Governor McGreevy to preserve the highland area around New Jersey's state reservoirs. I asked Thomas Borden from the Rutgers Environmental Law Clinic what he saw as a typical example of how this bill would infringe people's constitutional rights.
There's many areas in New Jersey where development or redevelopment has not occurred because the area is contaminated and is under the jurisdiction of DEP to remediate that site.
What the coalition uncovered in the bill were 12 counts of violation against constitutional rights, to include threats to public health, safety, and public property. They have brought this to the attention of Governor McGreevy. The governor has 45 days to veto or pass the bill, and cannot pass a bill that is considered unconstitutional. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on and listen to the music in the air.
Turn your radio on.
And welcome back on the radio. It's Tom Hartman. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. Tom Hartman here helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Dick Cheney lies about medical malpractice claims. This is another example here. The ends justify the means. Yes, we can lie to you, and it's just really no problem as long as it helps advance the agenda. That's the con position. The Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights today said Vice President Dick Cheney is lying to the American public by claiming that capping what juries can give to innocent victims of medical malpractice will lower health insurance premiums. Here's actually verbatim what they said. Jamie Cort said this. He's the author of Corporateering, How Corporate Power Steals Your Personal Freedom. America spends more on dog and cat food each year than all medical malpractice payouts combined. Malpractice, now, okay, yes, we buy a lot of dog and cat food. So what is that as a percentage of medical costs? Well, he says malpractice costs are a fraction of 1% of all health care costs. By contrast, prescription drugs are 16% of health costs. If Mr. Cheney and the Bush administration want to lower health care costs, they would have permitted the government to bulk purchase prescription drugs for Medicare recipients. But they didn't, you'll recall, because the drug industry came in as they were writing the Medicare legislation in the big hospital industry, you know, Bill Frist's buddies. And they say, you know, let's put some and not only that, the freebie that's going to come back to bite people next year and the year after, where the corporation said, hey, toss some, give us $18 billion so that we won't drop people from we won't drop retirees from our health coverage, but don't require us to not drop them. So they get the money, and they can drop people. And it turns out, now we're learning, they intend to. Anyhow, he says, limiting what innocent victims collect from wrongdoers cannot have an impact on health care premiums. Right, this is less than 1% of total health care costs. Only curbing the greed of the insurance, again, quoting here from Jamie Court, only curbing the greed of the insurance and pharmaceutical industries can make a real difference, but those industries are among the biggest campaign donors on the Hill. Brings it back to corporateering, fascism, the merging of corporate and state power, and the ultimate threat to democracy in the United States. So, wake up. Wake up, my friends. Time to tell people what's going on. We would like America back. Thank you very much. Tom Hartman here. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class-action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
The League of Women Voters has long been a voice of reason and moderation in American politics. But the leaders of the League recently received a searing blast of raw outrage directed at them, coming from a surprising source, their own members. From all across the country, angry LWV members fired off calls, emails, and several shrieks of horror at the hierarchy, decrying a decision the leaders made last year to endorse the use of paperless electronic voting machines in our elections. Since that endorsement was made, there's been a growing awareness that these corporate-owned and operated computer voting systems are wide open to hackers, manipulations, vote theft, and other problems. Indeed, California authorities have banned the use of machines provided by Diebold, Inc. after finding unauthorized software in them and experiencing malfunctions that jeopardize the outcome of elections this spring. Most alarming is the fact that electronic voting provides no paper record of each ballot cast, so there's no way to track the integrity of the vote in case there are suspicions of tampering or miscounts. As a result, there's been a fast-spreading grassroots rebellion against entrusting our democratic electoral process to the handful of corporations that program and supply these treacherous machines. The demand is that the devices must include a verifiable paper record of every vote cast. The League of Women Voters has now joined this rebellion. At its recent biannual convention, some 800 delegates from its local chapters voted overwhelmingly to rescind their leader's earlier endorsement of paperless voting machines. They passed a resolution demanding voting systems and procedures that are secure, accurate, recountable, and accessible. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a testament to the integrity of grassroots groups like the League that they can inform themselves and correct their course. Now, if only our corporate and political leaders would do the same, maybe we'd get a little integrity back in our electoral process.
When I started this company, our mission was to be the most useful and most ethical provider in the financial services business.
Charles Schwab, founder and chairman of the Charles Schwab Corporation.
When you're dealing with people's money, when you're dealing with their financial dreams, you've got to hold it with the greatest of care.
With industry-leading equity research, trusted investment professionals, and online equity trades as low as $9.95, Charles Schwab offers investors a better choice when it comes to low-cost investing.
It's about service. It's about best value. It's about ethics. It's all those things. That's what we're about every day.
To learn more about Schwab's new lower-cost trading options, call 1-800-7-SCHWAB or stop by a local branch today.
For pricing details, visit Schwab.com. $9.95 for Schwab Trader CT clients or those with $1 million in assets. Advice and certain research available for a fee. Charles Schwab & Co., Inc., member SIPC and NYSE.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
A And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast. Appleton, Wisconsin, official ejected from Bush event. We talked about that yesterday, how Supervisor Jason Nelson was bounced out for wearing a T-shirt under his shirt. Well, in Charleston, West Virginia, they had actually nailed a couple of people who were wearing visible T-shirts. This on the 4th of July. The couple, Nicole and Jeff Rank, had gotten their tickets to show up for a presidential visit. This was not a campaign stop. This was a presidential visit. And the president showing up. And you recall the First Amendment of the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion, prohibiting the free speech thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In other words, you can express your opinions in public places, particularly if it has to do with politics. And these folks, this couple, Nicole and Jeff Rank, were wearing T-shirts that said, Love America, Hate Bush. They had tickets to George Bush's gig. And they showed up and got arrested. Let off in handcuffs. Taken downtown and booked. Photographed. Thrown in the slammer. And now the city of Charleston, West Virginia, has decided that was a mistake. And they should probably win our Caught You Doing Something Right award. Yes, the city of Charleston, West Virginia, we caught you doing something right. The city council, the Republican head of Mayor Danny of the city council, Mayor Danny Jones of Charleston, West Virginia, backed a resolution written by Councilman Harry Detzler, a Democrat. And this resolution says, and I quote, If Nicole and Jeff Rank did nothing other than peaceably exercise their right of free speech and expression as guaranteed by our Constitution, then they should not have been arrested or charged with a crime. The city does hereby apologize to Nicole and Jeff Rank. Isn't that great? Now, here's the little subtext to it. This has been happening all over the country, of course, for the last year. People showing up for Bush rallies and or for presidential visits. And if there's any evidence, if they're wearing a, you know, pro-Bush T-shirt or carrying pro-Bush signs, no problem. They're right to the front. They can stand in the streets. They can do anything they want. But if they're wearing anti-Bush T-shirts or literature, they get herded off to free speech zones. Free speech zones. And they get arrested if they don't show up. So here we have, this happened in Charleston, West Virginia. These two people, they had tickets to the event. They showed up. They had Love America, Hate Bush T-shirts on, got arrested. And now the city, and the interesting part of it, though, is that the Secret Service, according to the Charleston Police Department, was the group that instigated the arrest. And there's a Charleston Police Department says the Secret Service made us do it. The SS made us do it. The SS is saying, we don't remember that. But the exact same identical thing has been happening all around the country. So I don't think it was an idea that Charleston, West Virginia just kind of came up with one day. Our book of the for most of this year now, we've been doing a regular monthly feature on BuzzFlash.com, where I write a review of a book that I think is really worth your reading. And our book this month, and I mentioned this actually earlier this week on this program, and our book this month is The Fourth Turning, an American Prophecy. The subtitle, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. Now, this is a book that came out back in 1997, as I recall, 1996 or 97, and therefore had to have been written in 95, 96, and yet it predicts the events of today with such eerie accuracy. I mean, including the polarization of America, 9/11, the sense of crisis, all this stuff, and talks about what's coming next. That I thought, and the authors, William Strauss and Neil Howe, have written several books since this book came out. And then before this, they had written another book called Generations, as I recall, which I also read when it came out, The History of America's Future, yeah, Generations. But this book, I think, is just absolutely brilliant, and you must check it out. And so I wanted to have William Strauss on, one of the authors, also one of the founders of the Capital Steps. How cool. William Strauss, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
And well, that's what happens with generations as they age. They just
there you go.
Get older and get better.
We get wiser, right?
Let's hope so.
When I passed 50, I started getting it that wisdom is something that has to do with experience, not knowledge.
Yeah. But doesn't it startle you that boomers behave the way they do sometimes? I was listening to what you were saying before I came on the air about not tolerating dissent and conversation among people who don't agree with you nearby, and recall those campus debates of the 1960s. We demanded that right, but then again, in the same meetings in which we demanded that right, we didn't brook any dissent, did we?
Yeah, that's it is interesting. I remember. Do you have something on that is causing an echo there, William?
No.
Huh. Okay. It must be our system. I was hearing myself in the. Anyhow, yeah. I remember the ironies and inconsistencies and strangenesses of the 60s. Certainly. Let's talk about the premise of this book real quickly here. The fourth turning. What is a fourth turning?
The fourth turning is the last turning of a cycle in which there are four turnings. A turning is an era of history that is approximately the length of a generation.
So roughly 20 years.
A time during which each generation that's alive in a society is entering its next phase of life. And when you consider that generations are approximately the length of time it takes to go from birth to adulthood in a society, that's usually about 20 years.
Yeah.
You can't set your clock on it. It could be 17 years. It could be 25 years. But it's going to be somewhere around there. And so a turning is going to be approximately that length of time, too. When we wrote Generations, and you're correct in saying that you write a book before it comes out, we wrote that really during the late 80s and published Generations in 1991. We originally were just looking to tell a story of the history of America's generational heritage and the endowments that generations left for each other. But what we discovered as we got into this was the unusual pattern. I guess I shouldn't say unusual. It's just an extraordinary pattern in which there are four kinds of generations that repeat in that sequence.
Over and over and over again. The first generation sets up a condition.
It has a link to the experience of the epic crises and religious or spiritual awakenings that a society has. And so you have a generation like a boomer generation that is born in the immediate aftermath of some great war or a political or empire crisis that has a personality that is similar to other generations that are born in that same kind of situation, like the generation born after the Civil War or the generation born after the Revolution and the founding of America. Those are three generations that are following very similar life cycles.
So roughly every 80 years. And then the generation after the Civil War?
And so what happens is as you get generations like boomers that age into midlife as they did during the 80s and 90s and now are on the brink of elderhood and entering that, you get a certain attitude that they've got, and then you've got a generation under them like X today, and then a generation under them like millennials, and you have older generations whose influence is weakening as they age and die. And so the society feels a certain way because of the generations and their life's cycle experiences and the missions that they perceive that they have.
Right, and each one, because of its nature, so these four cycles continuously repeat over and over and over again, and that being an 80-year arc, basically, and the fourth cycle is the fourth turning that you talk about in the book.
Right.
So what
in... It's approximately the length of time of a long human life.
Right. So
that has a lot to do with the society's tendency to forget experiences that they don't have in their own living memory.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, because people don't remember what led up to, for example, the Great Depression. I mean, there's just this amnesia about it. Increasingly now, there's even an amnesia of the Great Depression itself. What then do you know, looking back at history and at these cycles, what do you see now for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years out?
Well, when we wrote Generations, we saw that the middle of this current decade, what we call the OO decade, was the time that we were poised to have another fourth turning, which is a time in which the attitudes and agendas of the last awakening, alias the 60s and 70s, would land on the society and the world in full force.
Mm-hmm.
That happened when the Great Awakening produced the Revolution. It also happened when the transcendental movements of the 1830s and 40s contributed to the Civil War, and we think that what happened in the 60s and 70s are going to lead to that, not only
in America, but around
the world.
In that same regard, would you say that the progressive and populist movement of the 1890s, 1900s led to the Great Depression and the Civil War?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I wouldn't say it led to the Great Depression. What it did is it led to an attitude of crisis management. It certainly led to the New Deal, the social gospel.
Right. So now we're going to see what?
Well, we're going to see a tendency of our society to sacrifice liberty for order and security, a much more martial attitude among the leadership as well as the people who would be expected to implement and then as soldiers follow. This is something that's not very well understood among boomers about their own generation, and that is that boomers are by far the most martial, pro-war generation in our country today. They have been all their lives. They opposed the draft, but they didn't oppose the war so much. It was the generation older than them that did.
Interesting.
And what happens in a fourth turning is you get these bits and pieces of things that have been left untended during the third turning, during the time when individualism is at its peak in a society, and then stuff starts to happen as a consequence of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so the fourth turning comes about. We're talking with William Strauss, the co-author with Neil Howe, of The Fourth Turning, an American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About History's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. We'll come back from this break. I want to ask you, Mr. Strauss, is there some good news in here? Hang on.
Yes, there is.
Okay, hang on. This is Tom Harbin. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Matama, Apollo, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Topeka, Flair, Killander, Dillarama, Killarama, and everywhere.
And welcome back, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Being president doesn't mean you have to get the facts straight on significant issues such as justification for war. By the way, we've been speaking with William Strauss, author of The Fourth Turning, and he is back. I was going to say we had a flaky phone line. Here we go. William Strauss, you're back on the line.
Hi, how's this?
This is much better. Okay.
Oh, we somehow got that FBI tap off.
There you go. Yeah, we tried a line that that Ashcroft is not listening in on. So you were saying that the you're seeing, you know, this tendency towards authoritarianism coming up. But what about the possibility? I mean, that was not the ideal that was held by, for example, the generation after the founders, was it? Or the generation after the Civil War? I mean, it seems that. Well, actually,
times, Tom, there was a sense that the society had just solved a very hard problem, and now they just wanted to get on with life.
So that was more like the 50s.
Yeah, like the first during the Jeffersonian era and
right.
The Gilded Age and so on. And what happens is that every now and then you really do need authorities to authoritate. You just want to make sure that they make good choices.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons that character matters so much when you're electing somebody to high office at any time, but especially in a fourth turning.
Mm-hmm.
There could be very fateful decisions. It's a time when Generation Xers, among others, need to be more engaged because the choices that are made could really have consequences for everybody's lives in ways much more fundamental than we've known.
So do you see, in your book, The Fourth Turning, you talk about a crisis where people feel that literally the survival of a civilization or a nation is at stake.
There may be a point at which we will feel that, yes.
Yeah.
And I can see some signs of that with this red zone, blue zone division.
Yeah.
And if this gets wrapped even further in questions of ethnicity and immigration on the one hand, and questions of war and peace on the other, you could imagine with a certain amount of back and forthing, a red zone president here, a blue zone president there, that there may be a time, especially as attorneys general keep broadening their powers, there may be a time in which somebody says, I'm out of here. And
yeah. There's actually a very strong...
I think our generation could do that.
There's actually a very strong secessionist movement right here in the People's Republic of Vermont. I mean, there's the people who are very serious about this has been introduced into the legislature about, you know, withdrawing from the union. And they really believe the country's going down the tubes.
There are things, too. It's sort of the blue zone versus the red zone. And
Do you think that there is this is a worldwide phenomenon? I mean, do you think that there's a world war coming that's going to be comparable, or a war coming that's going to be comparable to the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and World War I, World War II?
If Neil and I are correct about this cycle, there will be something that will happen in the next 20 years that will take us across the gate of history. And that's not to say that it's got to be a war or a world war. It does mean that the risk of war is high. The risk that the war will expand is high. The risk that we'll use the worst weapons available and others against us is high.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are higher in the sense that you're fighting for some abstract principle. You're fighting for religious or spiritual values.
Right, or democracy.
Good versus evil.
Yeah. So now, we got about a minute left here, a little less than that. What can we do? What should we do?
Well, the best thing that individuals can do is make sure their lives make sense in any circumstance. This is when your family becomes important. This is when not being in debt can be important. It's when having a positive relationship with others in your community and having a good reputation among people in your area can be important. You can't just
back to the fundamentals.
Individual.
Yeah, back to the fundamentals. And the libertarian ideal of, you know, the Daniel Boone kind of vision doesn't work in this kind of a...
Libertarianism is a bit passe and a fourth turning.
Yeah.
Much more of a community question.
Remarkable. William Strauss, author of The Fourth Turning, and other books. You guys have a website, real quickly?
Yes. Actually, check out our Fourth Turning website, www.fourthturning.com. That's FourthTurning.com.
Great. And there's links there to your other books, too, right?
Yeah, williamstrauss.com. You can track me down there.
Great. Thank you. William Strauss, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it. The book, The Fourth Turning in American Prophecy, What the Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with Destiny. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Ever wonder where your tax dollars are going? Well, the Justice Department spent 56,000 hours and $12 million of your money denying justice to American black farmers. In 1999, black growers won a $3 billion settlement in a class action lawsuit against the USDA when the agency admitted to racial discrimination in federal loans. But a new report by the Environmental Working Group found that 90% of black farmers who sought compensation were denied. The report stated that of the 94,000 people who filed for restitution, 81,000 were turned away.
California is now the first state in the nation to offer paid leave to workers who need time off for sick family members or a new baby. Most Californians will be eligible to receive up to 55% of their pay for 6 weeks per year. Under the new law, both large and small businesses are required to grant the paid leave, but only businesses with more than 50 employees are required to guarantee workers they will have a job when they return. And the program is entirely funded from deductions to a worker's paycheck. Studies have shown that companies that offer paid leave have higher retention rates. Australia and the U.S. are the only two countries in the world that do not guarantee leave for women during childbirth.
Once again, affordable health care is the center of a union struggle as at least 1,000 miners protested outside a bankruptcy hearing in Lexington, Kentucky on Tuesday. The miners are concerned a judge might void their labor union contract with Horizon Natural Resources. If that happens, they'll lose their health and retirement benefits. Other mining industries have offered to buy Horizon, but only if the union contract is voided. The United Mine and Workers of America have said they will take legal action to stop that from happening.
Governors across the United States are concerned over homeland manpower issues caused by the war in Iraq. The concerns were raised to Pentagon officials at the National Governors Association meeting in Seattle. The primary issue on the West Coast is the use of National Guard for fighting fires. Other concerns include lack of guards at already short-staffed prisons, potential flooding in the Midwest, and a lack of sheriffs and police officers to patrol streets.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by Good Jobs First found 18 offshore outsourcing firms have received $75 million in state government contracts using a variety of shady tactics. Former government officials were hired to lobby for contracts. U.S. firms would win contracts and then send them to foreign companies. And outsourcing firms would use a U.S. mailing address for only sales and marketing purposes.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. The fourth try. This book was really an eye-opener for me. I recommend it very highly. The Fourth Turning, even though it's been around for a while. And, of course, the authors, Strauss and Howe, have written several since then about the millennial generation and others. So, point I wanted to make. In the meantime, how long is it going to take to restore chaos?
You're free, and freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos.
Yeah, it will. It'll take time to restore chaos. The larger point, George Bush said on July 14th of last year, the larger point, the fundamental question is, did Saddam have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. Oh, really? Really? Well, he repeated this again this year on January 27th. He said, and then we went to the United Nations, of course, and got an overwhelming resolution, 1441, unanimous resolution that said to Saddam, you must disclose and destroy your weapons programs, which obviously meant the world felt he had such programs. He chose defiance. It was his choice to make, and he did not let us in, said George W. This is getting a little dizzy. And then even Senator Pat Roberts got in on it January 25th this year. He says, if Saddam didn't have them, why on earth didn't Saddam let the UN inspectors in and avoid the war? Well, yeah, it is a little dizzy. Here's the fact. According to the United States State Department, UN and weapons inspectors entered Iraq on November 27th, 2002. Ironically, the same UN inspectors that Bush claims were not permitted into Iraq by Saddam Hussein were actually urged to leave Iraq on March 17th of 03 by George W. Bush. In the same speech that demanded Saddam Hussein and his sons leave Iraq, and which also made it clear war was imminent. The UN inspectors were subsequently barred from returning by the Bush administration after the war. This from CBS News, quoting the State Department. Whitehouse.gov, a news release. Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave within 48 hours. Their refusal to do so, this is George Bush speaking, their refusal to do so will result in military conflict commenced at a time of our choosing. For their own safety, all foreign nationals, including journalists and weapons inspectors, must leave Iraq immediately. George Bush pulled the weapons inspectors out of Iraq so that he could bomb Iraq, not Saddam Hussein. And yet he keeps saying he wouldn't let them in, he didn't let us in, and it's not true. Well, here, Bush 101. Being president doesn't mean you have to get the facts straight on significant issues such as your justification for war. You can be a little dizzy. Now, here's the unintended consequences of going into Iraq with no plan, no policy, no program. I mean, you know, now George Bush has adopted pieces of John Kerry's suggestions that we go to the UN and have them appoint an interim government. And you know, Bush did what Kerry suggested after resisting it. But we still have this echo of the Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Feith agenda of putting, you know, 135,000 soldiers in there. Let's not forget the 40 people from Moldavia. But the problem that we have now, because of this Bush idea, the conservative idea that government bad, private corporations good. Anything government does, corporations can do better. Anything I can do, you can do. No. Anything you can, whatever. You get it. Just what the military needs the most at the moment, according to the Associated Press, senior Green Berets, Navy SEALs, and other elite forces are leaving. They are leaving the military in droves. Why? Because, you know, at the top, at 18 years of service, at the top of the game in the U.S. Army, they can earn $60,000 a year. That's the top. That includes housing allowance and special duty pay and stuff. But if they quit the military and go to work for Halliburton or one of the other military contractors that provides mercenaries, that provides security services. Remember L. Paul Bremer? Wherever he went, he was protected. The guys protecting him were not the U.S. military. They were not. Nope, sorry, they were not. They were private contractors. And these private contractors were ex-SEALs and Special Forces. $200,000 a year. So we've got this doctrine of let's privatize things, and yet the privatization is causing an evisceration, a hollowing out, a cutting away of our own military. Let's have tax cuts. That's going to create jobs. And then you have the tax cuts. It creates a huge deficit. It creates inflation. It causes problems with the economy, and it kills jobs. Let's have privatization of the military. That'll be a good thing for the military. And you privatize the army, privatize security services, privatize protection, privatize things like, you know, it used to be guys in the army did KP duty, right? They cooked. They peeled potato. No more. Now Halliburton does that. Used to be guys in the army delivered the mail. There was a mail corps, as it were. No more. Now Halliburton does that. And we pay them very well. $200,000 a year per person. So it costs us more. It damages our military preparedness. We've got our National Guard over in Iraq when they should be here, because we've got serious wildfire problems out west that traditionally have been dealt with by the National Guard. The probability of flooding in the next few months as flood season begins in the Midwest, and the possibility of a terror attack here at home between now and the election, if Tom Ridge and John Ashcroft are to be believed. And where is the National Guard, which is supposed to defend the nation? Iraq. A country which represented no threat to us, had not declared hostilities towards us, in fact, was frantically and desperately trying to sell oil to us. And we said, no, we'll just come and take it. Thank you very much. We don't need to buy it. Here you got Representative Jim Saxton, the Republican from New Jersey, saying he's on the House Armed Services Committee. He's a Republican. He fears the military is losing troops faster than they can be replaced for a counterterror war that has no foreseeable end point. Who's gonna fight the forest fires and floods? Or if there's an attack in the United States? The Pentagon, the Los Angeles Times, Troops could stay beyond limit. Pentagon is considering extending the tours of National Guard troops in Iraq who are nearing the 24-month active duty maximum. You sign up for the National Guard, they say the most that we will deploy you is for 2 years. And now a whole bunch of them are hitting that two-year limit, and the Army's saying, we're changing the contract. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to participate in the program, Roberta in New Mexico's on the line. Hey, Roberta, what's up?
Hey, Tom, what I got? It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Your last book, What Would Jefferson Do, is brilliant. A brilliant title. I'm looking forward somehow, someday, to find it.
Yeah, they start shipping them in the next week or two. So.
Okay. You know, universal suffrage and state support of the cooperatives was something Marx and Engels had always advocated. I'm reading Harrington's book on socialism, Past and Future, and he makes the point that there are many socialisms. And actually, Stalin and Lenin were actually anti-socialists in the final analysis. Stalin turned out to be more of a totalitarian dictator and probably more of a fascist. So I want to make the point here that democracy under capitalism is less than democratic. What is democracy in America anymore? I mean, we the people don't have the education that the Founding Fathers had. It strikes me how brilliant they were and how well-educated and well-read. We have a bunch of illiterates living in America.
Well, to some extent.
I mean, most are fascists.
To some extent. I was talking with a friend of mine last night and pointed out that...
giving the people the right to vote.
You're going to keep talking, okay.
And electoral structures were often rigged, as the 10th Federalist paper made so clear, to frustrate majorities. Is that your finding?
Yeah. The Federalist Number 10 actually was James Madison ranting about the danger of factions, and he identified the problem, and the solution wasn't offered until the 1840s and really the 1860s when John Stuart Mill published it, which was proportional representation. So they just, you know, they knew that they had a problem of if there were more than two factions. More than two parties that emerged, because in 1787, when the Federalist Papers were written, there were no political parties in the United States. Everybody was a Federalist. Everybody wanted to be, you know, have one nation. And Madison said, hey, if we have two parties, then we could have a situation where 51% of the people have control over 49%, and even that wouldn't be a good thing. And if you have three parties, you could have a situation where 34% of the people have control over the other, you know, 33% and 32%, or whatever the math, however the math works out. I can never do thirds, but you know what I'm saying. 1 point higher if you had three, and if you had four parties, you could have a majority. You know, you could have 26% of the people ruling everybody else, and that's not right. But he didn't have a solution for it. His solution was to beg people not to form political parties, and of course, you know, within 20 years, he was the president. As a Democratic Republican, one of the new political parties. So that's the problem. 1-866-889-8894. John in Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I had an interesting thing happened over the weekend. I went to one of the MoveOn.org parties for the Outfox or whatever it was, DVD video.
Oh, that's great. You know, I hear about those things. I read about them on the web. There wasn't one, at least that I know of, going on near us, and we have really busy weekends here anyway, so I didn't attend one. But what happened?
And actually, I was in Dayton, Ohio at the time, and it was a pretty good turnout, maybe 25, 30 people. But one of the guys there was an active-duty military man who had been stationed in Guantanamo.
Hmm.
And he was saying that there's definitely a growing movement in the military that they don't want to have anything to do with Bush. They're just, you know, tired of him, and they don't trust him. So that was really good to hear from someone who's, you know, actually there.
Yeah, well, they're the ones. I mean, you know, he gets up and he makes great speeches about how we have to support our troops, and then he slashes pay to them. He cuts benefits. He tells the Veterans Administration not to advise soldiers of their rights. You know, it just goes on and on. You know, the assaults that this administration has made against our soldiers, and finally, over the objections of the administration, the Republicans pushed through a pay raise for the, you know, in this last year. You know, just in time for the elections. I think most people in the military see through that. And they realize, you know, this is a little strange. This is not quite kosher. But, you know, good news, John. Thanks for sharing that. And I appreciate it. It's a, you know, this is great. These neighborhood parties. I mean, this is absolutely great. And to think, you know, Howard Dean really started this thing. You know, with the meetups. You could say meetup.com started it, but I think, you know, Howard Dean really popularized it, made it real, made it happen, and it is just so cool. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Cruz, California is on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Wow, I thought I'd call in with the Schwarzenegger report.
Oh, good. Okay, what's happening with our non-girly man, he who has had plastic surgery, who wears more makeup than most women, who poses in bikinis after he's had all the hair removed by wax, who is definitely not a girly man. Yes.
Yeah, you know, by the way, that is the most ridiculous story we have.
I know.
I got to say, as much as I have problems with Republicans, I got no problem with the girly man comment.
Yeah.
It was playful. It's not an anti-homosexual comment.
I agree with you. What amazes me is the amount of press it got, frankly.
Well, the fact is that nastiness seems to be what reigns. I think the real story is what happened to Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
What happened to Whoopi Goldberg when people get fired and are treated so badly.
And Dennis Miller does the same thing, and he gets congratulated.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and you know, what really we should talk about is the behavior at the Linda Ronstadt concert of the people who didn't like what she said, where they threw their drinks and tore down posters.
Yeah, they became
and
vandals.
That's not what the story is.
Yeah, they became vandals. I mean, it's, yeah. And although, I have to say, Billy, I personally, if I paid $15, $20, $30, $50, $100, whatever it costs these days to get into one of these kind of events to hear somebody sing, I really, you know, yes, if it was Linda Ronstadt and she said something bad about George Bush, I would probably go, yeah, cool, and I'd applaud her. But, you know, what if she said something supportive of Bush? I mean, I just, you know, I don't pay for politics with my entertainment, so I tend to agree that she shouldn't have done.
I disagree completely.
Okay,
I want to know from everyone that I meet what their politics are. I wanted that discussion to be just the freshest thing in everybody's mind.
Yeah, but not when you're paying for entertainment.
Here's the problem with that. The right wing, if there's one thing that represents all of them, it's how anti-free speech they are, how they don't want to hear from Hollywood. And you know what? I don't care who you are. I'd like to get to know you as a performer. I love it when they share parts of their lives with us. I want to know who produces the Tom Hartman show. I love to hear that the wife is involved.
Yeah, that,
I love that backstage
but
stuff.
But see, that is part of the show here. And for Linda Ronstadt to be talking about George Bush, frankly, or for that matter, for Charlie Daniels to be talking in favor of George Bush, I don't think it should be part of the show.
If you believe your country was in trouble, and you're one of these performers, and you get paid
But wouldn't it be nice to just have a break?
Great, and you don't speak about it every chance you get. That's the sin.
Yeah, no, I disagree. I think it's important, Billy, that we have times when we can just have fun, when we can get away from the craziness.
Not when your country is doing so much wrong on the planet.
Okay, well,
you have
more
responsibility than that.
We're out of time. We'll have to agree to disagree. Thanks for the call, Billy. Great to hear from you. Jim in West Virginia, hang on the line. We'll get to your call right after this.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A predatory fish from Asia appears to be loose in the river that runs through Washington, D.C. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. 2 years ago, an Asian fish, the northern snakehead, appeared in a small pond in Maryland and got a lot of attention as a vicious frankenfish. Wildlife experts were concerned that these fish might start showing up in other places, and their fears were justified. At least six northern snakeheads have been discovered this year in the Potomac River, which runs right through Washington, D.C. Walter Courtenay is a fishery biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He specializes in the study of invasive fish, and he says people have good reason to be concerned about the northern snakehead. It's a tough predator and could eat a lot of native fish. It also tolerates a wide range of temperatures and could survive almost anywhere in the United States. The fish that were discovered 2 years ago were deliberately dumped into a pond in Crofton, Maryland. The pond was completely enclosed, so it could be poisoned and the snakeheads could be eliminated. Courtenay says the situation today in the Potomac River is much different.
It's in a place where it cannot be eradicated. This is totally unlike the confined pond there in Crofton, which was 4.5 acres, which could be poisoned, which is what they did. There's no way you can poison the Potomac River, and there's no way you can drain it. So they're here to stay. That is if they're reproducing. We don't know that yet.
Courtenay says the impact of the northern snakeheads depends on their ability to reproduce.
I mean, if snakeheads become present in large numbers, they could cause severe damage to many of our native fish species. For example, within the Potomac, it could be largemouth bass and perch and so forth.
The northern snakehead is often used in Asian cooking, but it's now illegal to import live snakeheads into the United States. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, let me just say this very, very clean and straight. Probably shouldn't have ended an hour on this. We probably should begin it because it's a great discussion. There are some entertainers who are inherently political. If I go to hear Rage Against the Machine or Bob Dylan or the Grateful Dead, I'm going to expect to hear a political component to the music, and I'm going to love it, and I know what I'm going to hear. But if I go to hear somebody who says, hey, you know, I sing love songs, and that's what I want, you know, and I go with my wife, you know, because and then they start in the middle of that ranting about the fact that the Holocaust never really happened, or gee, we really need to pound Iraq, or isn't George Bush wonderful? I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear their politics. If that's, you know, if I didn't go for politically based entertainment, yes, there is politically based entertainment, obviously, and I'm not arguing against somebody's right to speak. This has to do with commerce. This has to do with people who are paying and saying, you know, this is the message that I want or I don't want. It's just, I think it's very simple. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Jim in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Not too much. I'd like to disagree with that last caller who said, made a statement that when we're doing so much wrong in the world, I don't see we are. You said earlier that Iraq posed no threat. Well, that's what they thought about World War Nazi Germany under Hitler for a while.
Yeah, and once it became obvious that Hitler posed a threat, we sat around for another 5 years and then finally did something. But
well,
it was obvious to
between Iraq now and Germany then.
The difference is that Germany was clearly a threat. Germany had invaded 11 countries by the time we did something about it.
But why wait 5 years? Iraq had
you wait 5 years because they didn't represent a threat. We didn't. The inspectors were in because the inspectors were in Iraq and they were telling the United Nations there is no threat, and that's why every country in the world was saying we are not going to vote to go into this war.
The inspectors were also kicked out of Iraq twice.
They were not. You know who kicked them out?
Saddam.
No, I'm sorry, Jim. Read your history, Jim. Bill Clinton pulled the inspectors out in 1998, and George W. Bush pulled the inspectors out.
Yes, he did.
Jim, I'll bet you $500.
They blocked them from inspecting places. They blocked them.
We pulled the inspectors out both times, Jim.
They blocked them from inspecting palaces. They blocked them from inspecting.
Not in 2003, they didn't. Not in 2003. The inspectors had full, unfettered access. Jim, I'm sorry. You're just wrong. You need to go back and check your facts. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music and Shelby for streaming us around the world. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering our program today, taking the calls. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Jay for our music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. The Toad Poop Lovers, yes. And thanks to you for listening. You too, Jim. Keep on listening. Let's keep arguing. Call me again. Take this on. But check your facts next time. It's the Tom Hartman Program. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global War.